All right, we're here. We're on the air. We are on the air. Thank you. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, finally broadcasting from the city of Chicago, state of Illinois. It is beautiful. It is wonderful. And I know a lot of you people know already out there know that tonight is the night you move your clocks back 1 hour. Hey, you get an extra hour of sleep. Isn't that something? Move your clocks back 1 hour for an extra hour of sleep. But that means one thing. It means that the days will be shorter. Isn't that something? At least in Chicago and Illinois, I mean, it's going to start getting dark around between 4 o'clock and 4:30. Wow, that's almost a 3-hour difference from actually what summer brings. Anyway, it's a good thing. It's fall, winter, whatever, Thanksgiving, Christmas. I mean, you got the holidays coming up. What can I say? Okay, and it's going to feel like the holidays, too, because the weather is going to be pretty nippy. Although the weather people say is going to be, at least for Chicago, I can't speak for where you are, it's going to be pretty nice coming next week. So we're looking forward to that. And we're trying to make plans for that. And another thing I want to say happy Halloween. You guys be careful out there. Be careful out there. Halloween is not the Halloween it used to be when I was a kid. Believe me, things have changed. A lot of things have changed. So be careful out there and happy Halloween to all the kids. And I understand some people are going to spend Halloween indoors. That's a good decision. That's a good decision, but I do know in Chicago it's raining and it's cold and it's miserable. So I'm imagining that a lot of people are postponing, if I can say it, postponing Halloween. And that's happening everywhere. They're postponing it. But you know who is really enjoying Halloween? More so than the kids, the adults. The adults are enjoying it a lot more than the kids. I remember years ago, Halloween used to be straight for kids, little kids, children. But now you got all the adults into it. I mean, you got zombies walking around everywhere. Batman, Batgirl, Superman. And these are adults. These are not kids, okay? But I guess it's fun. It's fun. Fun is fun, 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 fun. You know, a lot of it's still a day for kids, I just think that the adults have really, really went overboard with it. But, it's fun. It's fun. And once again, happy Halloween. This is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-857-1762. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening, everybody. And archiving the show, downloading the show, listening to the show whenever you can. Well, listen to it whenever you can because it's right there on my website. Right here on Blog Talk Radio. I mean, if you're researching me or you're downloading some things, it's right here. You know, you don't have to go far, look hard or anything for the George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm also in iTunes. I also have my own website, georgewilderjr.com. I'm also on Amazon. Put my name in the audio box up there, and you'll find out what all the things that I've written. And I'm continuing to write because I love writing, and I love talking to authors. And I'm scheduled to have a guest tomorrow. She's an author. She's talking about surviving mental illness. I can't wait to have her on the show because I want to learn some things myself, and I do have questions for her. So you guys stick around for that. Be here for that. That should be very interesting. It's always fun whenever I have a guest on the show. And I love having guests. I'm always trying to get them. I'm not always successful, but sometimes I am. And when I am, it's always a wonderful thing. It's always a wonderful show. So thank you for being here. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show live. Can't listen live? Listen when it's recorded. It's great. And most of my shows are pretty good, with or without a guest. They're great. They're wonderful. I get feedback from people in the chat room. I get feedback from people on Facebook. They inbox me, tell me things about the show that they like or dislike or whatever. I enjoy feedback. That's what it's all about, feedback. And I know everybody's not going to agree with everything I say. That's beautiful. That's wonderful. That's what it's all about. If you agree with everything I say, I wouldn't even have a radio show. I wouldn't be a host. It wouldn't be any fun if you agree with everything I say. But, you know, I mean, you know, it's a talk show. What can I say? You know, we talk. All right, this is George Wanda Jr. of the George Wanda Jr. Show, broadcasting from Chicago. Earlier today, I took my son to the dentist or the orthodontist to get some braces. And it was a mess outside. It was cold, rainy, and somehow the traffic was a mess. And the buses, the trains, they were all screwed up, and they're still screwed up. It's just an awful day. I even told the doctor when we got to the doctor, I said, this is not a day to be at the dentist. This is a day to be at home in the bed. You know, one of those gray, rainy, cold days. But like I said, the weather people said it's going to get better next week. So let's hope so. Let's hope so. All right. What do we have today? We have meeting. Okay. Meeting set on an Illinois budget impasse. All right. Okay. There is a meeting. There is a meeting, but like I said yesterday, Rauner said it's a waste of time, but there will be a meeting. And I went off bitching yesterday. I said, why a meeting if it's a waste of time? Why a meeting? Why hold a meeting? Why call it? Especially if it's taxpayer funded, why call it? Oh, excuse me. I got a slight cold, and that's because of the weather. But anyway, why hold a meeting? Why do this? Why hold a useless meeting where nothing is going to come out of it? But they're going to go through with it. I mean, Governor Bruce Rauner, Governor of Illinois, Bruce Rauner, in fact, Mike Cullerton of the late state legislature, the House of Representatives, John Cullerton, the state representatives, I mean, the state senator, his house, his caucus or whatever they're calling themselves now. All these important people, powerful people in Illinois, going to meet, and nothing's going to happen. And they know nothing's going to happen. It's an impasse. Nothing's going to happen. Bruce Rauner and Mayor Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, and Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois, these guys are fighting. They don't even like each other. They are fighting in the media. I've said this several times. Nobody likes Bruce Rauner. And it's proven. He bought Emanuel a dead fish. That's childish. That's stupid. That's not what a governor does. A governor governs. A governor does not go out picking fights, taunting, and bullying. This is what this guy is doing. Anybody who doesn't like what he's doing, which he's not doing anything, and they're criticizing him, so he's going to go out and buy a dead fish. I mean, what the hell is that? What kind of crap is that? That's not, they said Rahm Emanuel did it 30 years ago, but hey, that's 30 years ago. This is today. We have a problem today. Karen Lewis, the head of the teachers union in Chicago, called Rauner a sociopath. I could use a lot of harsher words than that. I mean, I have used them and I will use them. She's being nice. I'm pretty sure it has something to do with the budget, him not signing the budget, or the guy wanting to break unions, or him buying a dead fish. This guy doesn't know how to govern. He doesn't know how to do his job. He doesn't know the first thing about running a state. This is his first political job he's ever held. He's coming up on 1 year in November. And like I said before, the reason why he's in office is because you guys in Illinois did not get out and vote. Nobody voted for Rauner. He got in because nobody voted. If they did vote, he hoodwinked them into their vote by buying. He bought the vote. I mean, he was buying people gift cards to vote, offering jobs if they voted for him. You know, so they keep saying he was voted in. The guy was not voted in, not by the people, because the people didn't vote. A handful of people maybe voted, but that handful went to Bruce Rauner. And the people who did not vote, then the vote that they did not vote with went to Bruce Rauner. I've said this several thousand times. When you do not vote, that's a vote for the other person. Some people feel that just because they don't vote, that's it. No, it's not. You don't vote. That no vote that you do not vote with, if you understand, goes to the other person. Because we are the 99%ers. The rich people are the 1%ers. There are more of us than there are of them. But we did not vote. I did, okay? You did not vote. I voted in November 2014. That's how we got this jackass. And he is undoubtedly a jackass because he's blaming everybody who's anybody for this state's problem, and he's the one who is causing it. The dumbasses are going to believe him. They're going to stick with him. The haters are going to stick with him. The foolish are going to stick with him. The low information voter is going to stick with him. And the people who just hate Illinois and hate liberals, hate Democrats, and just haters, they're going to stick with Rauner. But the level-headed people are not. The most intelligent, the education, people with at least a high school education, is not going to go with this guy. But, you know, he got Rauner's got his minions. He's got his flunkies. They're kissing his butt. You know, but we know what he is. And the thing is, I am not the only one saying this. You got politicians saying this. You got other people with lots of money saying the same thing about Rauner, that he's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know the first thing about governing. And he's showing it, and he doesn't give a damn. He doesn't care. He wants to see this state go under. Like I said before, Rauner, the governor of Illinois, he wants chaos. He wants to see a big mess out here in the streets so he can blame someone else for it. Okay? He wants to see a teacher strike. That's why he's not, you know, funding the schools properly like he should be. He's taking away, he's stopping payments of federal dollars. Dollars that has nothing to do with the state budget. The guy's crazy. She calls him a sociopath. The guy's been called all kinds of damn names by other influential people, other politicians, other people who are running for office, senators, representatives, are begging this guy to stop the BS and get a budget for Illinois. We're going into the fifth month. And he just doesn't give two craps. And I'm pissed off at the legislature in Illinois because they seem to be sitting back letting this guy do this. Just letting him have his damn way. Rauner hasn't done his job since day one. The only thing he's done since day one was vow to bust unions and collective bargaining. This is what he wants. Why does he want unions? I've said this 1,000 times. He's at the unions because they have too much damn power, and the power that he wants. He's after Michael Madigan, the leader of the House of Representatives in Illinois, and John Cullen, who is the head of the Senate in Illinois. He's after these guys. Why? Because they have too much power, power that he wants. But dig this. Michael Madigan has 40 years in the Illinois legislature. John Cullerton has 30 years. Collectively, that's 70 years that they've had in Illinois politics. 70 years. Rauner hasn't had 1 year. And he's going to come in and try to control and tell these guys what to do and what they can't do and what they ought to do and ordering them around. He's got to be nuts. These guys are Democrats. They're not going to give up their Democratic values to please this nut. And this is the reason why we have this impasse. The legislature, John Cullerton and Michael Madigan, they have drafted and created and crafted so many budgets for this state. But Bruce Rauner just ignored it, saying it was out of balance because they didn't incorporate his turnaround agenda, which is to bust unions and to take away workmen's comp and to make this state a right-to-work state, which majority of the people in this state do not approve of. But Rhonda, he doesn't care what the people want. He doesn't give two craps about what the people want in his in Illinois. It's what he wants. It is what he wants. He is no governor. He doesn't talk to the people. I mean, he goes around shaking hands. He only does that because he wants you to think that he's not that bad when he is that bad. He tried to fool you with his smile and all that kind of stuff. The guy is just, one of my Facebook friends called him the devil in disguise, the Antichrist. Okay? I can think of a nastier name to call him than that. But, you know, a lot of people are saying a lot of things about him negatively, but I don't think they're hitting the right mark, you know, to be against him. And you got, like I said before, you got people who are on Rauner's side, his minions, you know, his ass kissers. They're there, you know. Illinois has never been in this type of shape before. It has never been in this type of shape before. We've never done this. We're the worst state in America. That is no doubt about it. Credit ratings for the state of Illinois, credit ratings for the city of Chicago is in the toilet, the dumpster. People don't want to do business with us anymore because of Rauner, because of the state problem. You play the lottery. If you win, you can't get your winnings, especially if it's over $600. You can't get your winnings because of these. And, you know, businesses are pulling up. People are not wanting to work with us. But it doesn't seem like they care. People are moving out of the city. People are moving out of the state. I can't blame them. Because of the high-ass taxes that Rahm Emanuel just pushed through the city council. So Rahm is not out of this either. He's not out of the woods either. We just got some bad, messed up, screwed up ass politicians in the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois, and a lot of people know that. That's why they book it. But they don't want you to know that. These politicians don't want you to know that because they think you're stupid. They don't want you to know that people are leaving. They want to say things like tourism is high, business are coming. Yeah, but there's more business leaving the city and state than there are business coming to the state and the city. They won't say that. But we know that's happening. Why would you want to stay in a city where the taxes are historically high? And when the taxes are historically high like that, everything else is going to be expensive. If you rent, look out. If you rent your apartment, look out. If you are a homeowner, look the hell out. If you work for the state of Illinois, if you're struggling, if you're poor, look out. It's coming. Believe me, businesses are gearing up right now at this minute to raise everything that they can that they think you're going to buy because they want to try and offset some of these high-ass taxes that are going to hit them in the ass in 2016. If you are in the state of Illinois, you are going to be affected. If you're in Chicago, you're going to be affected. This is politics. This is politics. If you live or reside in the state of Illinois, live or reside in Chicago, this is going to get you. It's going to get me. It's going to get all of us. Don't think you can't, that you're going to get away with this. It's going to affect everybody. This is why I say vote. Vote. This is politics, and it's affecting you. Why don't you vote? We can clean this crap up. We don't have to vote Rahm Emanuel. We can kick Rahner out. But you have. Have it up off your rear end out there and get to the polls. Don't do like you did last November, which you did not vote. That's why we get all these people. And that's why we get all these rotten people in office. And if you think about it, a majority of governors around America are in office because African Americans, women, young people did not vote. That's why they have wreaked havoc on some of these states. These Republican governors have wreaked total havoc on some of these states. Voter suppression. People have died and fought for for you and I to vote, but the Republicans don't want that. Why are they so obsessed with not having you or I to vote? Because it's a lot of us. We can keep them out of office. That's why they don't want us to vote. If we vote, if everybody vote like they're supposed to vote, these guys will not get in office. This is why they suppress the vote. We're powerful. In the state of Alabama, I mean, you got to have a driver's license. They've just made that law. You have to have a driver's license in order to vote. And dig this. They have closed the driver's license facilities in that state. Or either they have laid off a lot of the employees. So you cannot get a driver's license to vote. That's a voter suppression. Florida, remember Florida? 2012? Voting for Barack Obama the second, all the voting suppression that went on in some of these southern states was just awful. And it seemed like nobody could do anything about it. And after all of that voter suppression, people who could have voted did not. That's why we got all of these maniac Republican governors, not all of them, but majority of them, are in these offices. Are in the governor states, and they're ruining these states, southern states, Atlanta, Alabama, Mississippi, Dallas, Texas, Oklahoma, you name it, Kentucky. You got all of these Republican governors in most of these states in the South, and they just wreaked havoc on the poor. They've wreaked havoc on the middle class. They have, and they're going to do it more and more and more and more because they want this country just for the rich, just for the corporations. Do you think that the middle class is running this country? Do you think that the poor is running this country? Do you think that the people who are struggling to make ends meet is running this country? Do you think that people who are living from check to check to check is running this country? No, they're not. The rich people are running this country, the corporations, Wall Street, the guys with big money, the donors, the people who can buy off politicians, you know, buy politicians, get them elected, get them unelected. No, the middle class does not run this country. They should. The poor does not run this country. The struggling does not run this country. The corporations, the billionaires, the oligarch, they run this country. Not you, not me, not. Because why? Why don't we run it? We don't have any money. At least not the money that these guys have. But we do have one thing that can trump money, no pun intended. And that is our vote. And that is our collect voices. We can run their asses out of town with our vote. We can run their asses out of town with our collective voices. I am not a Democrat. Don't ever think that. They're too weak, too numbskull for me. I am not a Republican. No way. I am an independent. I think I'm think and say what I want and how I want. So I kind of do not like it when people say, well, George, you are a bleeding heart liberal. I am not. What I am is just one of these voices out here who wants to see the wrong made right. That's all it's about, making the wrong right. I used to be a Democrat, but they've disappointed me so many times, I said, I can't take this anymore. Okay, now Bernie Sanders, before he became a Democrat, he was an independent. You know, I think he'd be a runaway candidate if he had stayed an independent. Because most people in this country think that politicians, all they do is lie, cheat, become corrupt, dishonest. Yeah, and they're right. I agree with them. I totally agree. So why vote? And I think that's the reason why a lot of people didn't vote in 2014, November 2014, because they were just upset and pissed off at politicians. They didn't trust them. So they sat at home and said, I'm not voting. I don't trust these people. These people lie. You're right. They do. They really do. And but I guess I'm trying to defend that for some reason. But you still have to vote. We just have to pick the right people. We have to choose the right people. I mean, you just can't vote for somebody because they're handsome. You can't vote for people because they have a great sounding name. You have to vet them, check their backgrounds out, you know, look into their past, see what they're about. But a lot of times you can't do that. I understand that because some people, some politicians get in the office, they start, you know, getting offers of big money so they can run again, you know, and they clearly are not representing you again. They're representing, they become puppets. They're bought off. They become puppets of the big money donors. And they have to do what these people say, not what you or I want them to say, even though we voted for them, but they become bought and paid for. And so they become puppets with puppet masters. And this is what Congress is full of. And this is what is on that stage of that Republican GOP debate, conservative debate, if you want to call it that. These most of them, except for Donald Trump. Donald Trump has his own money. His own money, as he can well espouse to. And, you know, but we have to vote. Hold your nose. I know politicians are dogs, some of them, but you got to hold your nose and go in there and vote for the right person who you think is going to represent you, not represent big money, corporations, donors, lobbyists, but you and your family and your needs. That's the thing. The politicians are not doing that. You know, they want to run for president to get in there and just wreak havoc. And I'm not talking about they're going to get in there and cut entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, and all that kind of thing. I'm talking about just in general destroy the U.S. like Bruce Rauner is destroying Illinois. And it seemed like people are just sitting back and letting this stuff happen. Because the General Assembly, if you think about the Illinois General Assembly, the Democrats control it. The Democrats control it. So why aren't they able to override anything that this guy does or anything that he doesn't do? It's beyond me. Well, they'll say, well, they don't have enough votes. Tell us who are the Democrats who are turning their backs on the people? Who are the turncoats so we can vote them out come November? And they will be voted out because we're going to make sure that we put somebody up against them to run against them. We are going to do this. We are going to do this. But vote, 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 vote. That's what we have to do. That's what's going to happen. Or we're going to be in a bigger mess. Hold on a minute. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of it. All right, let's go to the phones. Okay. All right, caller, you're on the air. You have a comment?
Yes, sir, I do. Thank you for taking my call. I'm more than happy to participate in this discussion tonight.
All right, no problem. Illinois, go right ahead.
Illinois is a state. I am an expatriate from Illinois. I lived there all of my life. I served the state of Illinois as a police officer, put my life on the line for the citizens of Illinois. I was a National Guardsman for 20-something years. And so, believe me, I had a stake in Illinois, a real big stake. It was one of the greatest states in the union until the Democrat Party came along and ruined it, made hash out of it. And when you say things like people are just now moving out of state because of Governor Rauner, and I'll have you know, I was a radio talk show host in Chicago before I moved to Georgia in 2008, and we regularly talked for years before I moved about jobs leaving Illinois, and Governor Rona was nowhere in sight. Governor Quinn was running the state, who I debated, by the way, on the radio about this very issue. And I know why people were leaving the state of Illinois back then in droves, and particularly businesses. They were leaving the state of Illinois because of the taxes, because of the union regulation, particularly that were corrected to some extent, finally by Governor Rona addressing the right-to-work issue. And as you well recall, the Supreme Court's Beck decision says workers cannot be forced under union contracts to pay any dues or fees beyond those that are necessary for the performance of the union's employee representative collective bargaining duties. Anything in excess of that, involuntarily collected, such as contributions in particular to political parties a person may be opposed to, is illegal. And the government cannot be used, in particular the state of Illinois, the executive branch of the state of Illinois' government, may not be used as a collection agent, as a muscle man, as a knee breaker, in order to get the fees for the unions.
So you agree
and Governor
with
Governor Rona saying, no, my government isn't going to do that anymore. If that makes Illinois a right-to-work state, so bloody well be it. It needs to happen.
It's not going to happen because there's too many people here who are against it. They like being in their
union. So they don't care what the Supreme Court rules. I thought that we conservatives were supposed to be lawless in that respect. So you don't like the ruling? You just choose to ignore it? Is that it? I want to play something. Look, you say you're not a progressive and a liberal, fine. I'm going to take your word for it. But I swear to God, you sound like one. Now, I'm a conservative constitutionalist. I make no bones about it. I want to scream it from the rooftops. I am a conservative constitutionalist. When I look at an issue, the first thing I look to is the Constitution of the United States for the answer.
Yeah.
Secondly, the state constitution. And then how does that fit into my conservative philosophy and framework, meaning I want to conserve what is best about the society, its culture, and its history. And one of the best things about it is the free market. One of the best things about it is the Bill of Rights. One of the best things about it is the inalienable rights of man and transcendent, morally objective truth. And the Democratic Party, progressives, and liberals reject almost all of those things. They are depraved. And I think anybody that stands up to any aspect of it is doing a good thing. In fact, they're doing something ordained by God.
All right. All right. Okay. Thank you for your comment, as always.
You're welcome, sir.
All right. This is George Wilder Jr. of George Wilder Jr. Show. I'm going to take a break right here. I'll be right back. Okay. We're going to play a clip where I am I'm with some people and we're rallying against Bruce Rauner.
Let me just say this. While we become outraged with all the violence in Chicago, we've got to connect the dots. It is no coincidence that homicides are up and shootings are up. This weekend, 2 killed, 45 shot this weekend. And all this is going on while the governor has cut all summer employment jobs, and while the governor has ended all anti-violence jobs in this state. It's no coincidence when you're on the street and you're abandoned by the government why violence is up in this city and why violence is up in this state. The governor is a co-conspirator of what's going on right now in the streets of Chicago. We got to make him understand that Illinois is not another business investment of his. Illinois is a state where there's people whose lives are at risk. Don't treat this like some business investment, Bruce. Treat this like there's people who elected you. This is our money. This is tax money. We have a say-so in what happens with this.
How dare this man close the doors on our children? What's the difference in what he's doing now than Bull Connor did back in the day? We're not going to take it, ladies and gentlemen. The governor wants to balance the budget. off of poor people, off of handicapped people, off of the mentally ill. Ladies and gentlemen, he wants to balance the budget off our baby. But guess what? Have you ever heard him talking about telling his corporate people to take a pay cut?
No.
Have you ever heard him talk about reducing some of those corporate loopholes?
No.
Have you ever heard him talking about, okay, we have been in the crisis here in Illinois. It's not the Republicans' fault. It's not the Democrats' fault. It's really the economy. And everybody has not been paying their fair share. There's some boys on the sales street that make billions of billions of dollars. And I'm like the governor, quite frankly. I don't want to raise taxes, but I want everybody to pay their fair share. And they are making some transactions that they're not paying taxes on. So the only thing I'm saying to the governor, make sure that everybody's in, including my baby, and nobody's left out, including your friends. So with that being said, Mr. Governor, let us go back to Springfield. You want a budget? Let's talk about a budget. Let us gather the money from the guys on LaSalle Street and let's have a financial transaction tax. And then when we get finished doing that, Mr. Governor, let's develop our own bank like North Dakota. And if that's not enough, Mr. Governor, let's get rid of the insurance industry and have a single payer health care so everybody can truly be in and nobody be left out.
Don't mess with my children. You know something? We don't have to put up with a bully. A bully cannot win when people stand together. A bully cannot win when you're standing with your brothers and your sisters. A bully can't win when you build coalitions in the neighborhood. A bully only wins when you let them. Right now we have a coalition of individuals because we understand what Governor Rauner does not understand, and that is everything is connected. We are connected to one another. Child care is connected to a good education. Education is connected to health care, because you're not going to learn if you're sick. You're not going to learn if you're hungry. That's connected to a good job. That's connected to this state. This is not about one person who doesn't want to turn us around. He wants to turn us backwards. We are not going backwards. This is not we're going to be standing up here in the street, dancing, working for free. This is our state. This is not Ronnerville. This is not Brook City. No, this is the city and the state of the people of Illinois that deserve the best that it has to offer. We are not going to be held hostage. We're not going to be held against our will. Our children are not going to be the cannon fodder to fight your fight. This is something that needs to be addressed. We want the governor as your voice and as your ears down in Springfield. We want the governor to come to the table not talking about things that doesn't need. We don't need to be talking about remapping. A budget has nothing to do with remapping. It doesn't have to be a term limit. It's called come out and vote. Get the vote. That we need to be talking about, how do we fund those essential things that make us competitive, not only in the United States, but in the global economy. This is not about being a vulture capitalist. Who do you know, where do you know that a CEO tears down his own business just so he can make more money? Vulture capitalists. That's what they do. This is not a vulture capitalist situation. This is a budget about people, the budget about numbers, or that in his mind, a budget about numbers. There's a face on every dollar that's in the budget.
All right. Governor Bruce Rauner holds up a piece of dead fish. Okay, he goes to a fish shop yesterday, and he holds up a piece of dead fish. He says he's going to send it to Mayor Rahm Emanuel after he criticized the mayor for a high-ass property tax hike during the, conference Friday at Palina, okay, during a high during a news conference Friday at Palina Meat Market in Lakeview. Now, what kind of governor would do something like that? Instead of signing a budget for the state of Illinois, which we're going into our fifth month, and he's out buying dead fish, tuna, to send it to Mayor Rahm Emanuel, instead of getting a budget. And Rahm responded. Rahm was pissed. The guy was pissed. He responded. He said, "This guy, why are you doing something like that? We're 121 days without a budget in town, and you going buying dead fish to send it to me. And you've got all." Rahm said, "Do your job." Rahm is right. I'm not a Rahm Emanuel fan, but he's right. I mean, you know, this state is in dire need of a budget, and this guy is not going about doing his job. And I've said that many times. He's not doing his job. If you and I didn't do our jobs, we would be fired. They would let us go. This guy hasn't done his job since day one. The only thing he wants to do is bust unions, tear unions apart. And like I said, why? Because he wants power. He doesn't care if he's liked. He doesn't give a damn about that. He thinks he's going to turn this state around. He's not going to turn this state anywhere because this is a Democratic town, and we are not going to let him do that. This is not Wisconsin. He thinks he's Scott Walker, but this is Illinois. And like I said before, we are the worst in the damn state because of him. Pat Quinn, he wasn't a great governor. I will acknowledge that. A lot of us acknowledge that. But I can tell you this, if Pat Quinn would have gotten reelected, we wouldn't be in this crap we're in now. Totally. You know, you can call me, I'm not a liberal, I'm not a progressive. I just like to see things. I like to see the right in everything. You know, I don't think it's right. Okay, maybe I am a little partial to being a progressive, all right? And somebody has to. I mean, because we got too many people out here who hate progressives, who hate liberals, because what? We are just liberals. It's a dirty word in some areas. But anyway, we're talking about the Illinois budget impasse between the legislature in Illinois and Governor Bruce Rauner on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for archiving. Thank you for all of your thoughts and inputs and your calls and everything. And all of this, thanks for everything. I do appreciate that. I really do. I'm going to take a break right here. Let's see what we can bring up here. Okay, we got so much on the docket here. We got gun control. We got the economy. We got a lot of stuff here and a lot of interesting stuff. So let me see. Stay tuned. Okay, like I said before, my son was just, we just came back from getting him braces on his, he had some work done on his mouth, and he has braces, and he's sitting right here beside me, so I'm going to call him over. Denver, come on over. Come on, let's go. All right. Tell the people what you think about having braces in your mouth. Talk.
It's very irritating for my teeth, but I like the braces, though.
Can you talk clearly?
Yeah, I can talk clearly.
Okay, you got to get used to them?
Yeah, I'm getting used to them still.
All right, go back and take it easy, all right?
Right.
Okay. That was my son, Denver Wilder, giving a little take on his He just had some braces. This is his first time having braces. He has to get used to them. It was something else. I think it scared me more than it scared him. Okay. All right. This is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let's move right along. All right, if we can. All right. Okay. Like I was saying yesterday on the debate, on the third debate that the Republicans had, I think it was last Wednesday, and the third debate. And we were talking about how pissed off a lot of them are because they felt that the questioning by the moderators were totally unfair. And I'm finding out today that everybody on that stage did not think that the questioning was unfair. Everybody did not think that because John Kasich, I think he's the governor of Ohio, he said the questioning was fine. I mean, this is crazy. Some of these people couldn't answer the questions. They didn't want to answer them. They wanted to answer the questions the way they wanted to answer them, how they wanted to answer them, and when they wanted to answer them. Ted Cruz was awful, I think. You know, they didn't want to answer the questions. They couldn't answer the questions. You know, and now they're taking it out on CNBC, and they're taking it out on NBC, saying that we're not going to come on your network because your moderators, they don't ask questions that we should be asked. But like I said yesterday, if you're running for president of the United States, you should be able to answer any question pertaining to your job that you're trying to get. Because this job that they were trying to get, they're trying to be president of the United States. They're standing in front of America. They want to get this job. They're trying to convince America to vote for them, one of them anyway, for a job. And they're being – it's a job interview. When they're on stage debating, it's a job interview. They're in front of the American people. We're the ones who's going to hire them, or supposedly anyway. And you can't answer a question, a simple question. Majority of the time when one of the moderators asks them a question, a simple question, a real question, a question pertaining to something that they have themselves have said or done, or a question pertaining to how they would do something certain in America if they were elected, and they got pissed off. They were pissed. Ted Cruz was a monster. I mean, moderator asked him a question. He started talking about something else, totally oblivious. And then when the moderator said, "All right, Ted, your time is up," then Ted goes, "But I didn't answer the question. You want me to answer the question?" The moderator said, "Well, yeah, I wanted to, but you started talking about something else, so your time is – you wasted your time. But I can answer. No, you wasted your time." And then all of a sudden, Ted Cruz got pissed off and, you know, didn't like the question. Majority of them up there didn't like the questions. But now one of the Republicans or two or three of them are saying the questions were fine. What they want, what these Republicans want, they want to control the debate themselves. They don't want moderators because they don't want to talk about the things pertaining to America. Not one of them guys, conservatives, not one of them on that stage in that third Republican GOP debate, not one of them is fit to be president of the United States. Not one. Not one of them. And this is their third debate. I'm not going to talk no more about this after tonight. This is their third debate. And we heard nothing about gun control, voting rights, the economy, jobs, you name it. There was nothing there. And they want to work for us. They're not going to work for us. They're going to work for the corporations, the people who are funding their campaigns. You know, I mean, this was an interview, and they failed. This is the third time that they failed. Ben Carson, he lied through his teeth. You know, because a lot of things that Ben Carson said he didn't say, you can go dig it up on a video, and it will prove that he said what he said or that was his position. Then, and they ask him about it, he'll lie. That guy lies as you talk to him. As you talk to him, Ben Carson. I mean, Trump, I kind of like Trump. I mean, Trump was saying, hey, I'm not bought off. The rest of these guys up on this stage, they're bought off. They're bought and paid for. They're puppets. They have puppeteers. I like that, what he said, but I'm not a Trump guy. You know, I don't think he's presidential. Okay? Marco Rubio, he sounded great. He sounded good. Jeb Bush, you can just forget it. This guy is done. I'm hearing that some people have, some of his donors have pulled their money already. His staff person has quit without giving the public a reason why. I think Jeb Bush is through. I think he's dumber than his brother George. You know, so these, and John Kasich came out and said, hey, the questions were not that bad. They were not that bad. I don't see what the hell they were talking about. And this guy's a Republican. He was on the stage. So now this tells you that these guys and girls, they were a bunch of prima donnas, crybabies, wimps up on that stage. Oh, you asked me a bad question. I'm taking my toys and I'm going home. I can't answer that. You know, you're running for president of the United States. There should be no question out of the way if it's pertaining to your job. You should be able to answer it. I've been on a lot of job interviews. Some I didn't get, some I did get. But I can tell you this, I answered the questions that interviewer asked me, and I answered them to the best of my knowledge, and I answered them in a way where those questions that I answered were pertaining to the job that I was pursuing. You know, this is crazy. These guys, what they want, like I just said, what they want is no moderators. They want to get up there and debate themselves with no moderators. You know, but like I said before, they have fell flat from my standpoint. And from the standpoint of a lot of Americans, these guys have fell flat on their face. They have said nothing pertaining to America, the people. Because it's not about America and the people. It's about the Republican and the Republican Party. That's what it's about. Their fourth debate, they have nixed it. They said they told NBC that they didn't want to come to debate the televised debate in February because they felt that, you know, the moderators were asking two unfair questions. And John Kasich, governor of Ohio, a Republican, said, hey, wow, I'll go to the debate. You know, because the questions weren't that bad. These guys are unfit to be president. They should not be on a stage wasting America's time, wasting time watching these guys when they're talking about nothing. Carly Fiorina, she's such a liar. She's such a liar. Her makeup is falling off her face. She was fired. I mean, how can you make – she tries to make light of being fired from Hewlett-Packard, a company that failed under her leadership. She tries to make light of that like that's nothing. That's a precursor of how you would be as president. You know, I mean, look at Bruce Rauner. He never ran anything. A bunch of nursing homes, and now all of a sudden he's running a state. This is why we're in a toilet, because we got somebody who is inexperienced, stubborn, doesn't care about what's going on in his state. He doesn't give a damn. He's got his minions running around. He's got his flunkies, you know, speaking up for him, everything. But however, this state is in the toilet, and he is to blame. Nobody is to blame. He's the governor. It wasn't this bad. We weren't shut down. We did not. We had a budget before he got here, but now we don't. 6,000 kids have been thrown out in the street because he cut daycare. Jobs have been gone. People don't have jobs because of this. Funding has stopped for a lot of programs, needed programs. People out in the street, out of work. If I sound like a liberal, if I sound like a progressive, I'm sorry, but I'm not. I just like to see things through a clear mirror. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. All right, we've got to take a break right here. Thanks, everybody. I'll be right back.
the hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Come around the bend, I promise. This one's for Senator Rubio. You've been a young man in a hurry ever since you won your first election in your 20s. You've had a big accomplishment in the Senate, an immigration bill providing a path to citizenship that conservatives in your party hate and even you don't support anymore. Now you're skipping more votes than any senator to run for president. Why not slow down, get a few more things done first, or at least finish what you start?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. That's exactly what the Republican establishment says, too. Why don't you wait in line? Wait for what? This country's running out of time. We can't afford to have another 4 years like the last 8 years. Watching this broadcast tonight are millions of people that are living paycheck to paycheck. They're working as hard as they ever have. Everything costs more, and they haven't had a raise in decades. You have small businesses in America that are struggling. For the first time in 35 years, we have more businesses closing than starting. We have a world that's out of control and has grown dangerous, and a president that is weakening our military and making our foreign policy unstable and unreliable in the eyes of our allies, and our adversaries continue to grow stronger. They say there's no bipartisanship in Washington. We have a $19 trillion bipartisan debt, and it continues to grow as we borrow money from from countries that do not like us to pay for government we cannot afford. The time to act is now. The time to turn the page is now. If we don't act now, we are going to be the first generation in American history that leaves our children worse off than ourselves.
So when the Sun Sentinel says Rubio should resign, not rip us off, when they say Floridian sent you to Washington to do a job, when they say you act like you hate your job, do you?
Yeah, let me say, I read that editorial today with a great amusement. It's actually evidence of the bias that exists in the American media today.
But do you hate your job?
Let me answer your question on the Sun Sentinel editorial today. Back in 2004, one of my predecessors to the Senate, by the name of Bob Graham, a Democrat, ran for president, missing over 30% of his votes. I don't recall them calling for his resignation.
Is that the standard?
Later that year, in 2004, John Kerry ran for president, missing close to 60 to 70% of his votes. I don't recall the Sun Sentinel endorsed him. In 2008, Barack Obama missed 60 or 70% of his votes, and the same newspaper endorsed him again. So this is another example of the double standard that exists in this country between the mainstream media and the conservative media.
Senator, thank you. John,
can I bring something up here? Because I'm a constituent of the senator, and I helped him, and I expected that he would do constituent service, which means that he shows up to work. He got endorsed by the Sun Sentinel because he was the most talented guy in the field. He's a gifted politician. But Marco, when you signed up for this, this was a 6-year term, and you should be showing up to work. I mean, literally, the Senate, what is it, like a French work week? You get like 3 days where you have to show up? You can campaign or just resign and let someone else take the job. There are a lot of people living paycheck to paycheck in Florida as well. They're looking for a senator that will fight for them each and every day.
I get to respond, right?
30 seconds.
30
right.
seconds.
Well, it's interesting. Over the last few weeks, I've listened to Jeb as he walked around the country and said that you're modeling your campaign after John McCain, that you're going to launch a furious comeback the way he did by fighting hard in New Hampshire and places like that, carrying your own bag at the airport. You know how many votes John McCain missed when he was carrying out that furious comeback that you're now modeling it under?
He wasn't my...
No, Jeb, I don't remember... Senator. Well, let me tell you, I don't remember you ever complaining about John McCain's vote record. The only reason why you're doing it now is because we're running for the same position and someone has convinced you that attacking me is going to help you.
Well, I've been...
Here's the bottom line. I'm not... My campaign is going to be about the future of America. It's not going to be about attacking anyone else on this stage. I will continue to have tremendous admiration and respect for Governor Bush. I'm not running against Governor Bush. I'm not running against anyone on the stage. I'm running for president because there is no way we can elect Hillary Clinton to continue the policies of Barack Obama.
I think there's a big issue. John Hartwood, there's a bigger issue here.
We're moving to Governor Bush. Governor, the fact that you're at the fifth lectern tonight shows how far your stock has fallen in this race, despite the big investment your donors have made. You noted recently, after slashing your payroll, that you had better things to do than sit around and be demonized by other people.
What I said was, I don't believe that I would be president of the United States and have the same dysfunction that exists in Washington, D.C. now.
Okay.
Don't vote for me if you want to keep the gridlock in Washington, D.C. But if you want someone who has a proven, effective leadership, that was a governor of a state that transformed the culture there, elect me so I can fight for the American people and change the culture in Washington, D.C.
Okay, it's a question about why you're having difficulty, and I want to ask you in this context. Ben Bernanke, who was appointed Fed chairman by your brother, recently wrote a book in which he said he no longer considers himself a Republican because the Republican Party has given in to know-nothingism. Is that why you're having a difficult time in this race?
No, the great majority of Republicans and Americans believe in a hopeful future. They don't believe in building walls and a pessimistic view of the future. They're concerned that Washington is so dysfunctional it is holding them back. There are lids on people's aspirations. Think about it. 6.5 million people working part-time. Workforce participation rates lower than they were in 1977. 6 million more people living in poverty than the day that Barack Obama got elected president. And the left just wants more of the same. We have to offer a compelling alternative that is based on hope and optimism and grounded in serious policy, which I've laid out, and you can go get it at Jeb2016.com.
Thank you, Governor.
John.
We're going to get down the line. Becky's got a question.
We'll get to everyone. Ms. Fiorina, I'd like to ask you a question. You are running for President of the United States because of your record running Hewlett-Packard, but the stock market is usually a fair indicator of the performance of a CEO, and the market was not kind to you. Someone who invested a dollar in your company the day you took office had lost half of that dollar by the day you left. Obviously, you've talked in the past about what a difficult time it was for technology companies, but anybody who was following the market knows that your stock was a much worse performer if you looked at your competitors, if you looked at the overall market. I just wonder, in terms of all of that, you know, if we look back, your board fired you. I just wondered why you think we should hire you now.
You know, the NASDAQ dropped 80%. 80%, and it took 15 years from the NASDAQ to recover. I was recruited to HP to save a company. It was a company that had grown into a bloated, inept bureaucracy that cost too much and delivered too little to customers and shareholders. It had missed, before I arrived, expectations for 9 quarters in a row. As an outsider, I tackled HP's entrenched problems head on. I cut the bureaucracy down to size, reintroduced accountability, focused on service, on innovation, on leading in every market and every product segment. And yes, it was a very difficult time. However, we saved 80,000 jobs. We went on to grow to 160,000 jobs, and scores of technology companies literally went out of business like Gateway, taking all their jobs with them. The truth is, I had to make some tough calls in some tough times. I think actually people are looking for that in Washington now. And yes, I was fired over a disagreement in the boardroom. There are politics in the boardroom as well. And yet the man who led my firing, Tom Perkins, an icon of Silicon Valley, has come out publicly and said, you know what, we were wrong. She was right. She was a great CEO. She'd be a great president of the United States because the leadership she brought to HP is exactly the leadership we need in Washington, D.C.
Mrs. Fiorina, it's interesting that you bring up Mr. Perkins because he said a lot of very questionable things. Last year in an interview, he said that he thinks wealthy people should get more votes than poor people. I think his quote was that if you pay $0 in taxes, you should get 0 votes. If you pay $1 million, you should get 1 million votes. Is this the type of person you want to defend?
Well, this is one of the reasons why Tom Perkins and I had disagreements in the boardroom, Becky. Nevertheless, one of the things that I think people don't always understand is how accountable a CEO actually is. So, you know, I had to report results every 90 days in excruciating detail. I had to answer every single question about every single result and every single projection in public until there were no more questions. And if I misrepresented those results or those projections in any way, I was held criminally liable. Imagine if a politician were held to that standard of account. I will run on my record all day long. And I believe people need a leader who is prepared to make tough calls in tough times and stand up and be held accountable.
Thank you. We're out of time. Thank you, Mrs. Fiorina. Carl.
Senator Cruz, congressional Republicans, Democrats, and the White House are about to strike a compromise that would raise the debt limit, prevent a government shutdown, and calm financial markets. That fear of another Washington-created crisis is on the way. Does your opposition to it show that you're not the kind of problem solver American voters want?
You know, let me say something at the outset. The questions that have been asked so far in this debate illustrate why the American people don't trust the media. This is not a cage match. And if you look at the questions, Donald Trump, are you a comic book villain? Ben Carson, can you do math? John Kasich, will you insult two people over here? Marco Rubio, why don't you resign? Jeb Bush, why have your numbers fallen? How about talking about the substantive issues people care about? Carl, I'm not finished yet. The contrast with the Democratic debate, where every fawning question from the media was, which of you is more handsome and wise?
So this is
and
a
let
question
me be
about
clear.
The debt limit, which you have 30 seconds left to answer, should you choose to do so.
Let me be clear. The men and women on this stage have more ideas, more experience, more common sense than every participant in the Democratic debate. That debate reflected a debate between the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks. And nobody watching at home believes that any of the moderators has any intention of voting in a Republican primary. The questions that are being asked shouldn't be trying to get people to tear into each other. It should be, what are your substantive solutions to people
who are... I just want the record to reflect. I asked you about the debt limit, and I got no answer.
Okay, all right, you want me to answer that question? I'm happy to answer the question. I'm happy to answer the question. Well, let me tell you how the question is. Let me tell you how that...
We're moving on.
Let me tell you how that...
Senator Paul, I've got a question for you on the
same subject. So you don't actually want to hear the answer, John?
Senator Paul...
You don't want to hear the answer. You just want to hear the insult.
You used your time on something else. Senator Paul...
You're not interested in an answer.
John, I'm interested in an answer from Senator Paul. Senator Paul, the budget...
This is what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. And after that, Ted Cruz went on to say that the entire questioning was out of line. And a lot of them, Republicans on stage, agreed with him. You know, agreed with him. He had his chance, but he blew it. You don't want me to ask him questions, John? You don't want me to ask a question? And it became a ruckus. Jeb Bush and Mario Rubio, they had a confrontation. You know, it was all about confrontation, assault, verbal assaults on each other. The questioning, the only thing that I have against the questioning is that they didn't ask the right questions. They didn't ask anything about gun control, voting rights. They didn't ask any issue-based questions. That's the only thing that I have against the moderators for this third GOP debate. They didn't ask any pertinent questions. To me, all the questions were easy, and a lot of questions they asked were right on. They were right on. It's just that the candidates just lied about them. Because a lot of the questions that before they asked, they researched the questions. But the type of questions I didn't like is like Rubio, Jeb Bush said this about you. Jeb Bush, what do you think about that, Rubio? And that's the kind of question that starts an argument, verbal assaults. I don't think those kind of questions should have been asked. They were asked those kind of questions in the first and second debates. But the Republicans, they want a debate where they control the debate, and that's not going to happen. And NBC is just kissing their butts. Well, we'll see what we can do to try to straighten it out. Yeah, they're going to try to straighten it out because they want Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the moneymaker. Donald Trump is the ratings king. When people are tuning into those GOP debates, they're tuning in to see Donald Trump, of what he's going to say. They're not tuning in to see Jeb Bush, Mario Rubio, who has just gotten millions of dollars infused into his campaign because of his performance in the third debate. You know, they are tuning in to see Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the front runner. He's the national Trump front runner. I think he took it away from Ben Carson. Ben Carson is African American. He's just totally pathetic. I mean, he lies as you look at him. And one of the things about when Ben Carson lies, you can always fact check it and find out that he did say that particular thing that they may be asking about. He did say it, but on stage he denied it, and a lot of people go pull up those videos and say, "Hey, you did say it." And I don't know. Ben Carson is scary. He's a scary guy. They all are scary, you know. Rand Paul, they just seemed like Rand Paul was just a forgotten guy out there. Nobody talked about Rand Paul. Nobody called on him. And also they complained about not getting enough time to speak. Okay. All right. I'm assuming that I'm trying to check it out. I'm assuming that the next debate, if there is one, it will be a Democratic debate. But then again, I don't know. The DMC, they just schedule debates like they've wildly scheduled these debates. You never know when a Democratic debate is going to be, but they got five more debates. It's obvious the Republicans have a lot more debates than the Democrats, which I think is crazy. But Deborah Watson Schultz, she doesn't think she's trying to help Clinton win. She doesn't want Bernie Sanders taking the president office in 2016. She wants Hillary Clinton. Maybe Hillary Clinton to make her vice president. But I can tell you this. I mean, if Hillary Clinton does get the nomination, she ought to pick, but I don't know, and I kind of doubt it, she ought to pick Bernie Sanders. If she gets the nomination and she picks Bernie Sanders, it's a shoo-in. It's a landslide. It's a total landslide. You know, because I don't think many liberals, progressives, and it's a lot more of us than it is of them. Believe me, we're the 99%ers. They're the 1%ers. All we got to do is get our asses out there and vote, and we can keep this muck out of office. But if you do not vote, you do not vote, it doesn't mean that your vote is going to lay stagnant. It doesn't mean that your not vote is not going to get anywhere. Because if you don't vote, that's a vote for the other person. Period. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. This is George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. I'm going to be, in the coming weeks or maybe months, I'm going to be doing a show on a little bit more on gun control, because that's what's happening. Because I'm just hearing in Chicago there's been a ton of shootings. I'm just hearing in Chicago that there's been a ton of shootings. I mean, I'm looking at this Sun-Times webpage, and there's been a ton of shootings, and the weekend is not even over yet. You know, it's not even over yet. Started yesterday. This is Saturday. And I just don't know. Whatever plans that this superintendent has, Chicago superintendent, police superintendent, is not working. It's not working. I was talking yesterday about smart guns. They're trying to get smart guns, guns that will not fire. That will only be fired by the owner. I don't know if that's going to work. Then they're talking about buying back guns. I don't think that's going to work. I mean, not fully. I mean, if someone's got 10 guns, you know, and they decide to sell two of them back to the city, they got eight more, you know, that's not doing much. Or if someone turns in a broken gun and keeps the ones that are working pretty good, I don't think that's going to work. Smart guns, buyback program. What I think is going to work is to lock these guys up, catch these guys, because a lot of these times the guys, they get away with murder. They're not caught. I mean, it's hard to sit here and fathom that somebody could actually get away with murder in Chicago. Because every time you hear about somebody's getting shot, a child getting shot, or somebody getting shot sitting in a car, or somebody getting shot walking down the street, or somebody's getting hit in the head and robbed, and these people are not caught, that sends an eerie feeling, because if these people they're out there again, and the police are not there, they're not there to deter them. The only time you see the police is when the body's on the ground and the cops are all standing around and the bad guy's gone, you know. But it's a good feeling to know that if somebody gets hurt in the city of Chicago, that the perpetrator, the guy or the girl or the criminal is caught. But to hear something like, well, there's been five shootings, two people died, three people injured, no one's in custody. That's a downer. Because if that person is not in custody, if that person is not caught, that person is out there to do it again. The superintendent claimed he has plans to stop the violence.